So the talk is about the pattern known on the web as CQRS. I'm trying to figure out how to way to explain this other than as a really, really bad Scrabble hand. So what does CQRS stand for? Well, it stands for Command, Query, Responsibility, Segregation. Or separation, as some call it. And I think you probably couldn't get commands and queries any more separated than they are on this slide right now. So has anybody heard of this pattern before? Couple people. Anybody using it? Not yet. Okay, cool. So hopefully this will be helpful. What is this thing? Well, it's an architectural pattern. So it's not an architecture per se, at least I don't think so, but it does describe a way of building systems with the typical forces and consequences. It's about how to build systems for a particular set of requirements, which are very, very common in modern, particularly public-facing, web-facing systems. Self-service. You are writing this for your mother who wants to order flowers, not for a data entry clerk sitting on floor 7 of a bank building. Okay? You want it for everybody's mother, so you need to be able to scale up without too much changes to the software. And you need to be able to do asynchronous processing on the actual requests. And imagine if everybody's mother had to wait to go through the entire credit card exchange debit process account from the bank in order to order their flowers. That would not be good. So this requires certain assumptions about the nature of your system. If your system does not fit these assumptions, then you probably do not want to be using this pattern. Or this is also quite reasonable, although sometimes business guys get a little upset about this statement, you can change your business method to match these assumptions. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. So the first one here on the screen, more reads than writes. Usually a lot more reads than writes. Okay, let's think of an example. Oh, Wikipedia, for example. How many reads do you think they have versus the number of edits to a page? I think the ratio is probably in the 6 or 7 digits on the read side. And speaking of which, the whole Scrabble analogy, I also happen to notice that query is worth 17 points and command or write is worth only 14 points, so obviously reads are more important. Assumption about your user base. These are for multi-user systems. If you're building PowerPoint or Word where only one person's working on a document at a time, this is a waste of time. This is a system for multiple users, multiple simultaneous users, and they're also untrained. What I mean by untrained is not that they are, you know, completely never touched a computer before. They're not data entry clerks. They are not going to take a training course on how to use your website, nor should they have to. This has a great deal of effect on how you arrange your commanding structure and how you arrange your user interface. Asynchronous. Can you arrange your business process such that a reasonable response to a submit button is, thank you, you'll get an email in a few minutes? When you think about that, this is actually fairly common and not that hard. You know, you sign up for a website. What do you get? Well, you'll get a confirmation email in a minute. You order something from Amazon. Well, you'll get a box in the mail a couple days later. So what does this mean? Well, here, let's look at the typical domain-driven design three-tier architecture. Okay, we have our UI layer, we have our domain model, and we have some persistent store sitting behind this thing. Let's look at the two types of operations, reads and writes. Well, on a read, UI makes a request to the domain model. The domain model crunches away. It'll talk to the persistent layer, pull back some objects, do a little processing, return something back to the UI. Fairly straightforward. Similarly, on the right side, what does the UI do? Well, the UI talks to the domain model. The domain model does some processing, talks to the persistence layer, and returns back to the UI. Seems pretty symmetric, but are those two sides really symmetric when you think about it? Let's compare. Reads versus writes. When you are reading, reads have to be fast. I can't remember. What's the typical length of delay on bringing up a web page before somebody says the heck with it and goes somewhere else? It's seconds. You have to get that answer up like that. Reads are synchronous. It is very much a request response. Give me the page. Here it is. It cannot be, give me the page. Okay, I'll give you back later in an email. That would be a very interesting but short-lived business model, I think. Reads are idempotent. You know the whole thing Glenn was talking about with rest, get versus put? Okay, you should be able to read the same page 17 bazillion times. That's not going to affect the contents of the page. It's not going to affect what you get, and it's not going to affect what anybody else gets. Okay. Now, the last thing that's important, what kind of makes a few people nervous, reads are invariably stale. Okay. How many people, when booking an airline ticket, actually believe that the seats that it told you were available are still available between the time you saw the screen and when you pushed submit? People are used to this. Business people think about, what do you mean I'm working on stale data? If they ask you about this and challenge you on this, it's like, are you telling me you didn't make your business plans based on last quarter's quarterly report? Talk about how stale that data is. But it's still good enough. So the important point here is that reads don't have to be completely up to synced up with the current state of the data as long as it's close enough. Okay. Now on the write side, writes are often much slower. Okay? When you're writing to a database, you've got to write to the database. Otherwise, if something crashes and goes down, you know, you lost it. You may be writing out to a mainframe. You may be talking to a fulfillment system. Okay. Writes are asynchronous. You can easily arrange your, you know, you can do some quick validation and then just pass the command off to some other processor to work on the real stuff later. It is possible, for example, in your front end, you take a credit card number, you can at least do the check digits and verify that you think you have a valid credit card number, and the rest of the validation can happen later asynchronously. The user doesn't have to wait for that to happen. Okay. Writes are stateful. Okay. If you're, you know, debiting somebody's account, it better be up to date on what's currently in their account. And finally, yeah, that's what I meant. Must be up to date. You don't want to be writing based on stale state. So let's look at this. What can we do since we had one domain model which handled both the read side and the write side, but these are very different responsibilities with very different characteristics. Now, what's the S in solid principles? Separation of concerns. Why are we using the same model for both reads and writes? This is the core of CQRS right here. We have two models. We have one that is designed and optimized for reading. We have one that is designed and optimized for writing. And in fact, we can go one step further. Not only do we have separate models, we have separate data stores as well. So how does this work now? Well, when we read, this is going to look familiar. We talk to the read model. Hey, persistence, give me my page or whatever. It comes back to the UI. There's our synchronous loop. This needs to be optimized to be fast. On the other hand, on our right side, and by the way, if you look at most of the other talks on this topic, they have the two sides reversed. But then I get really confused because I'm talking about the right side, but it's actually on the left. So this is my one and only contribution to the literature on CQRS. So when we're doing a write, what happens? Do we call directly into a write model? Uh-uh. What's that? A queue? We don't write our request into the we don't call the model directly. We instead create a command, a message that goes into the queue. Okay? UI is now done, and the user can go off and do something else. Okay. Some point later, the write model, or the processor, is sitting on that queue, pulls in the command, goes off, processes it, and updates its state, or could call out to the other systems, or whatever you want it to do. And then at some point later, there is an event that goes from the write side to the read side, updating the read database. This gives us our eventual consistency. Okay. Now, I mentioned before, this is about scalability. This separation is what gives us that scalability. Let me go back for a second. The read model, remember we started by saying, you know, we have a massively more reads than writes. So, are we really going to improve our overall system throughput much if we optimize the heck out of the write side? Probably not, because all of the system resources are going to the left, to the read. But since we have segregated this thing, this can be replicated and this can be replicated. So you can scale it out by simply putting more web heads on this, put the read model and the read database, actually put that read database on the web server. Make it as close as it can be to the actual web server. And I know that's probably scaring a couple people, so I will talk more about that in a second. So what goes in the read store? Well, the read store is specialized for fast retrieval. If you're doing a join, you've set it up wrong. Okay? Denormalized out the wazoo, you're going to see plenty of repeats. You're going to have, in fact, one recommendation which I found very helpful. When you set up a screen, create a table for that screen with exactly the fields that screen needs to display. Okay, so you're going to get lots of repetitions. It's going to be highly denormalized, but you know what? It's going to be fast. Your database access, assuming you're using a database at all, you don't even need a real database here. Your database access is just select star from table screen name with perhaps a where clause for an ID. Okay. This should be close to the UI because you want to minimize round trips. You don't want to have to necessarily put a network call in between your screen and your read store. Now, I just mentioned before, put that thing on the web server. That scares admins, that scares DBAs. Like, what about security? Somebody's going to be hacking our web service. They'll get at this data. It's like, well, you know what? We might use a relational database. I have, when we get to my demo, I'm going to show that because, well, I happen to have one. It's not a conceptually, it's not a database. It's a cache. Let me ask you this. How many people do ACLs and auditing on your ASP.NET in-memory cache? Same deal. That is the purpose of this thing. In fact, these databases are pretty close to read-only. And as we go, as I'll show in a moment, if somebody trashes that thing, well, number one, they're only trashing it for one webhead. So as you're scaling out, you know, yeah, you might get an intermittent failure. You can trash the whole thing and reload it with very little effort. In fact, you can set up the permissions on the web server so that, you know, only one process in the entire machine actually has write access to this database. And I'm going to show what that is in a minute. So that's the read side of things. What about the write side, the commands? Okay, so everything here is asynchronous, so we have to send messages. Those messages are called commands. The write model, his job is to execute business rules and then generate events. So what is a domain event? This is not the .NET event keyword that we're talking about here. These are other messages. So what is a command? A command is a message. The names of these things are very important to keep yourself straight. When I say it's imperative, a command says do something. In a wiki, for example, it would be edit page command, register user. Okay, go do something. Commands are also task oriented. What I'm talking about is, you know, we're doing a lot of messaging, we're doing asynchronous stuff. Ideally, you want your commands to be self-contained, atomic. So if you're writing a command, add line item to order, you're doing it wrong. Okay, that is far too fine-grained. And if stuff gets lost or executed out of order, you're in trouble. You really want to do order stuff, and here's the cart, and include the contents there. Let the front end manage the contents of the cart. Again, you know, caching. In the command processing, okay, Well, the first thing that happens with a command is, of course, you must validate it, right? Okay. Most of that is actually done in the UI, not in the command processor. Okay. And what are you validating against? Well, if I'm registering as a user, I need to know if the username's already taken, right? Well, you know what? I've got a table already that's got me a list of all the currently registered users in my read store. So I can simply hit that from the front end. It's very fast because it's very close. And if that's not valid, there's no reason to even send the command. It's not going to function. Okay? It cannot succeed. So you try and do validation. Now, validation and business rules are two different things. The goal of validation is to ask the question, could this command possibly succeed? Is it well-formed? The goal of validation is not to say, are the current conditions and state of the system such that this command will succeed? Okay, that's what the business rules do. The business rules look out at the environment and say, oh, well, you're a gold customer and you qualify for this order, so therefore, boom. It's a little bit of a fine line. But the separation is important, and that last bullet is what this has come down to. When you design your commands and you design your system, you can design it such that your commands will succeed most of the time. Failures on command execution are typically very rare. So a command gets sent from the UI to the command processor. First thing it's going to do, of course, it's going to revalidate, because you can't trust anybody, right? Of course not. Validation fails, what do? Drop it on the floor. Okay? You don't need to send anything back to the UI even. Just drop it. Here's why. If you got a command that failed validation, that means that somebody sent you that command without going through the validation you built in the UI. Who is that person? That person is most likely a hacker. Do you really need to provide a convenient user experience to a hacker? So the Java the right model, you know, once you get through the validation, you execute whatever rules are going to happen against that command, essentially executing the command. The net result, there will, of course, be some state change. But there's also going to be a set of events. So in the wiki example, we have, you know, I'm creating a page. So create page. Do-do-do-do-do. Page created in the state. Boom. A page created event. Now remember, create page. I'm telling you to do something. That's the command. Page created. That's the event that said this has happened. Now, in my fairly simplistic examples, I've got pretty much a one-to-one event to command. In real systems, you will typically have multiple events coming out as a result of one command, depending on how much is being changed. So what's an event? Well, like I said, past tense, expresses changes in the domain. These are passed to a series of, this was a box that was not on my other diagram. Something needs to receive those events. Now, how is this? It's typically a message. You would send it over a queue or a message bus or something along those lines, a pub-sub system. There's going to be an event handler sitting there waiting, and you're going to have one of these event handlers per read store, essentially. The event handler's job is to grab the event as it comes off the bus and update the read store according to what happened in the event. This also ties into another pattern called event sourcing. I'm not going to go into it too much, but the idea here is we're generating these domain events anyway. Oh, and by the way, events also make a fabulous integration model if you're inside an enterprise, because you already have all the hooks to know when to go out to other systems. When other systems need to talk to you and integrate, they can send commands and listen to events. And you know it works because you're using it too. Event sourcing, the basic idea is, normally in domain-driven design, what do? Well, we have our nice object graph with all this stuff in it, and then we have to map that onto our relational database. Well, you know what? The events capture the state of the system over time. Why do we need the relational mapping? Can't we just capture the events? And then to reload our entities, we simply reload from the event store. So I've got a little code I can show. We'll say that. So let me bring that up. So let me just show it running first. So I've got a basic wiki here. I can do the typical, let me log off so we can see that. So, oh, page does not exist. Let me edit it. Let me see if I can make that. Edit this page. Oh, I have to log in. Actually, let me register a new account. I am presenter. Example.org. Okay, I'm registered. And oh, Parish, apparently I can't type. Oh, okay, so. Okay, no, shut up. Another page. Edit. Is my thrilling other page. Now go back to home page. Submit. There you go. Now here, notice that yellow blurb at the top there. This is a fairly common and reasonable approach. Okay? When that edit went in, okay, it went off to my right store, went into a queue. It may not be there yet. Okay? So you put up something like this. Say thank you for your edit. It will take a few moments. I see this on blogs all the time. Okay? Users are used to this. Users understand when they see that. And this is necessary because there is no feedback from the right store back to the UI, right? It's one way. It goes through that queue. But users need some sort of feedback, right? And, you know, if something just goes seriously wrong, well, you got a couple choices depending on your business model. For a wiki, you know what? Just drop it on the floor. If it blows up, it blows up. So what? You know, nobody's going to get upset because their blog comment didn't really go through. If it's about money, well, you usually know where it came from. So you have the message, the command that came in. You can send them an email that said, hey, you know, your account was overdrawn. Please call customer service and update. Something along those lines. For something like this, you know, if anybody uses Stack Overflow, for example, I'm sure at least a few of you do. You enter a request, comment, boom, 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 goes in immediately, and, you know, you get that nice pops up. How much do you want to bet that your answer is actually in their server by the time you see that pop up? Probably not. Probably not yet. It's processing. It's making its way through. It's not done yet. They're lying to you. But you know what? That's okay. You see it's there. You know it's going to make it eventually. You know, I bet you if you bang on F5 enough, you will get a point where your response is not on the screen yet. But who's going to sit there and bang on F5 except for people like me who think, I bet you they're lying to you. So let's look at how this is done. So let me close this down here. And oh, come on. That's VS, right? There we go. Okay. So now this is the downside of this pattern here, is that you do tend to need a lot of infrastructure to get things set up. But once it gets set up, it's a breeze to work with. So I have divided my commands and events into separate assemblies to manage the references. I've got a basic website. This is just an MVC website. And actually, let's start there. So I'm going to go into my page controller. There we go. So basic, I have a command bus, which I use to publish my commands to go out. I have a repository to pull in my, that's actually used when reading pages. I'll talk about that in a second. So view page, this is actually going, I'm playing with a technique I saw on a blog somewhere, which actually works pretty well. I'm using a model binder. When the request comes in, I grab the page name, and then I go out to my DTO repository. Each screen, each view has its own DTO. I'm sure you've all worked with view models or something like that. MVC apps, you've got to have a view model. Well, my view model is actually reflected directly in my database. And again, this doesn't actually have to be a database. I could have used a flat file if I really wanted to. My database for this thing, in this case, here. I have, you know, current page version, edit page, page list, registered user. You know, here's the DTO for the registered user. Okay. My repository just says get, and I get an object, and I've got some where criteria. That's it. And I use them for all of these. And if we flip over to SQL Server, where are you? There you are. If we look at the tables in my read store, let me make this a little bit larger. Okay. I have a table per DTO. The columns in that DTO match exactly by type and by name with the properties in my DTO classes. In fact, this code is set up such that if that table doesn't exist, it will go out and create it based on the definition of the class. No ORM required. Fast. That's the read side. The write side, let me look. Bring up my user controller. So let's look where we're registering a user. Okay, so we go out, we send our registration form. This comes back. This register model, this is not a DTO. This is not being stored in read state. That's the result of my form, which gets posted. So we do validation. There, here we go. Well, user repository.get. But I'm looking, new model username. This is where I do my UI and validation. If it's not equal null, that means I already have a user by that name. So I say, sorry, please take it again. Otherwise, I create a create user command object, passing in the stuff I got on the form, publish it on my command bus, and I'm done. That user will then be registered at some point later. And typically, by the way, later is a matter of seconds. When I go and process inside my domain, so I have a series of command handlers, like create user. Let's follow that down. Okay, command handler. So we go, we create a new user, we save. Now notice I'm not actually double checking here that the user exists or not. What is the window, you think, between the usernames overlapping? You know, when could I get through to here and have my usernames have a duplicate username? It's pretty darn small, very small window. In fact, I would argue in the typical case, now not everybody's typical, but in the typical case, the effort it would take to automate and double check at this point that you had a duplicate username is smaller than the amount of money you would spend for somebody to call up to customer support and say, yeah, I got a problem logging in. So I know that feels weird. As developers, we were always trying to fix the 100% case. Keep that in mind, okay? Pay attention to how much this actually costs to fix, because you've got to go through a lot of rigmarole. So this goes out. Now, when I call user repo save, this user object actually generates a series of events. Okay. In fact, new user created event. That actually ends up going out to an event handler. And, of course, I am skipping over all the details of how these are wired up. User created event handler. He's got a DTO repository. This is talking to the read store. Okay, what does he do? Well, he news up a registered user DTO, fills in the fields, throws it out in the repository. There's our update of the read store. And that's how the loop is completed. So this is a very short slot, so I can't go into too much more detail. Let me just finish up by giving you pointers to other information. Three guys I found very useful. Udi Dhan is one of the big guys in this space. That's his blog. He has a great hour-long talk from TechEd last year on this subject. Goes into a lot more detail. Greg Young, also really big here in this space. And that second link is a site he set up to keep pointers to a bunch of other CQRS information out on the web. And Mark Nijhoff, he's a blogger. I'm not sure what his pedigree is other than he seems to write well, and he's a smart guy. And that second bullet there is not actually his post, because he's really lousy at keeping pointers to his old stuff. But it's a sort of a catalog of his postings on CQRS. He has another example application out on GitHub you can grab, and a two-hour video discussing how it's built in detail. And I used a lot of the ideas from that in building my example as well. So I would recommend, if you're interested more in that, we are currently looking at opportunities for writing guidance in this area as well. So if you're interested in us seeing us do more, please come talk to us. And with that, I think I am over on my slot, so I think I will call it a day. I will be here for the rest of the conference, so if you want to talk about this stuff or anything else, please let me know. All right, thank you.